You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
What's up, Launch Street? Tamara here, your host. And my favorite color is burnt orange. So excited for today. All right, here's the thing. We're doing it a little bit differently. I get a lot of questions from our amazing Launch Street community. And every now and again, as you know, I like to pepper in a more Q&A style session where I answer those questions. And we got such a juicy one in lately that I actually moved it up in the queue so I didn't have to wait to release it. It's all about how do you get the people who just love status quo to see the innovation light. What an amazing question by Kelly Foster, who is an amazing Launch Reader. So thank you, Kelly. Woot woot. Here's how it's a little different today. If you've listened in the past, you've heard me talk on and on for 15, 20 minutes, which is all fine. But I wanted to shake it up a little bit and do something that I thought would bring more value, more engagement, more perspective to the conversation, as well as give some of the people in our amazing community a chance to shine as well. So I have a co-pilot, and let me tell you, it was so much fun to record this podcast with her. Her name is Connie Wharton. She is amazing. You will love her. I introduce her when we go in, but she is a well-being warrior. She works on mind, body, and spirit so that you can unlock your full potential. She's got some interesting perspectives that are different than mine, I think balance out mine, and actually fill some of the gaps in some of the things that I said. So I think you're going to love this episode. It's an amazing question, and I think the conversation that Connie and I have is just fantastic. So enjoy. Okay, I am so freaking excited for today. So as I said in the intro, we're going to do our Q&As a little bit differently. And I get to have a co-pilot. Woo! Yay! Who is this amazing person, as I said. She is a friend and a colleague, Connie Wharton. Let me just tell you quickly what she does or what she's about, and then we will dig in. So Connie is about bringing deeper awareness to our mind, body, and spirit, which allows for our greatest potential to be realized. So given that, I think you can see why I wanted to have her on. So Connie, I'm so glad you're joining me for our little adventure and podcast.
I can't even tell you how glad I am to be here, because I always love our discussions.
They're so good, right? Yeah. We were just, in fact, offline having a whole honest and real discussion, which I just thought needs to be its own podcast, but that's for a different time. What we want to do today is we want to answer the questions that you all on Launch Street are kind enough to submit. And the one that I thought we'd focus on today, because I think it's one that a lot of us deal with. I mean, wouldn't you say, Connie, sometimes that in dealing with change, it feels like half the battle is getting other people to go along the journey with you?
Yes. Because it can be so uncomfortable for people.
Yeah.
And people don't know how to deal with that tension of not knowing. And because they know what they know. We know minds work in habits.
So that's so interesting. I hadn't really thought of it that way. It is that kind of, I love the way you said that. It's that tension between knowing what we know and being comfortable and uncomfortable with the unknown, and how you deal with those two. It's almost like you can almost visualize a string being pulled in both directions in your mind at the same time.
Yes. You know, I think it's kind of like, you know, when your partner goes, "Hey, honey, we really need to talk."
That's like, tension. That just made me stress out.
Oh,
and you're not even my partner.
Right. You know, yeah. Or like, Houston, we have a problem. And oh my goodness. Right? Because we're going to have to do something about that.
I love that.
We don't know.
That just made me laugh. Totally. I'm all stressed out. What are we doing here right now, honey? Is this an intervention? So let me go to the question that was submitted. And this is from one of our amazing Launch Readers. Her name is Kelly Foster. She works for the Army Research Labs. This is the group behind the scenes that are working really hard to make sure that our soldiers are safe in the field and have the latest technology and have the advantage. They're an incredible group. I've done multiple things with them, and Kelly is a rock star in herself. Kelly asked a question that I thought was really important. She said, "How can one help the blind see the innovation light, i.e. helping those that think we can continue business as usual and don't realize we must innovate to
keep up or be ahead of changing times? So there's two reasons why I love this question. And Kelly, you are a rock star. You're the best. I'm so glad that you're the one willing to ask these type of tough questions. One is, I think it's something that we all deal with, and we sometimes assume that because a company or organization is innovative in what they produce in the world, they don't have some of the struggles that the rest of us have. And these guys are steeped in innovation every day, and they still have those kind of challenges that we all have too. But there's a second part to it that I want to talk about, because I had this conversation with this woman. I was keynoting. I was in Seattle with this incredible group of educators. And they're dealing with change just like the rest of us. They've got, you know, their communities, their parents that they serve are looking for different things. There's new competition coming up. There's all these things happening. And when I was out there, this woman was sharing a story with me. She said, you know, she was having a really hard time getting, as Kelly was saying, those blind to see the light. But the way she put it, I thought was fascinating. She said, the challenge I have is when I come to my leadership team with a new idea, something that is going to require change, that's maybe going to help us move into the century that we're in, because education can be a very big, archaic system. They see it as I'm telling them that everything they've done is wrong, that they're wrong up to this point. And I thought that was a fascinating way to look at it, as it's not just about how do I get people to buy into change, but how do I approach them with change without making them feel like they totally suck?
You know, I find that very interesting, because everything in life evolves and transforms.
That's not true, right? Everything.
Right. And so bring that awareness to the group. You know, what we've done was great, but we're always going to be evolving and transforming. Otherwise, we die.
Do you ever feel like, though, when someone comes to you with something they want you to do differently, that they're ever saying to you, well, Connie, that means that what you're doing isn't right, so we need to change what you're doing? Because sometimes I wonder, like, sometimes I do feel, and I'm in innovation, and sometimes I feel like when my team comes to me and goes, tomorrow we need to do this differently, I'm like, are you telling me that the last 20 years of my life, that I, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like, Houston, we have a problem. Like, it feels really personal.
Right, and I think because we take criticism very easily. I mean, we can hear criticism in almost anything. And being aware that it's not, I think is really important. So, I think we're really sensitive people. I think all of us have a lot of sensitivity.
Isn't that kind of interesting? So I want to go, I have so many questions for you right now, so then I have it. Here's question one is, let's go back really quickly to the evolver kind of,
okay.
You're right, right? Especially anything organic, right? A flower, a tree, or whatever, like it's either growing or dying, right? And humans, right? We're either growing, I'm not sure what point we transition, or we die, we're decaying, I suppose. How do you deal with that then when it comes to organizations? How do you get people to buy into the idea that, hey, like change is, not only is it have to happen because, oh my God, there's external pressures, but that's just the natural flow of life.
Right. And why not give it a try? I used to, when I owned a day spa, I would change procedures. And it was like I was going to pull some teeth. And I would just say, you know what, let's just try it. If it doesn't work, we can go somewhere else. We can do something different. We can go back. But let's give it a try. And that absolutely relaxed everybody.
So do you feel like stating it as a quote-unquote experiment or a test made it easier for them to get on board? And I'm assuming half the time you knew you were going to keep doing that, but just that mindset helped them adopt.
Yes, very much so.
You know, so this is going to sound like a tangent, but I swear it relates back. So I'm on a macronutrient program, right? So I'm always tracking my grams. But I work really hard to make dinners at the family likes, because I've got to feed everybody. Not if it were just me, it'd be like chicken breast on a bed of spinach every night. But
yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
And I want good food, so I try to like have all these recipes. And every night, I have to give it the thumbs up or the thumbs down. And I ask the family if it's a new recipe, do you like? Do you not like? Do we do this again? Actually, is the question I ask. Do you want me to make this again? And what I've really come to realize is that if they say yes, great. If they say no, it's not me.
That's right.
It's the food. And it's almost like for me, that's actually helped me in other ways in my work. Be okay with hearing no and we don't like what you did, because, hey, it's not me. It's just the food.
You know, that's a great analogy. But it's not a personal thing. They don't like whatever you're
yeah.
making. That's really neat. By the way, I think that's really cool. I'm going to come over for dinner.
Yeah, you should come over. You should all come over for dinner. I can't remember what it was I made the other night, but it did not go over well. And I won't make them something else. I'm not that parent. Sorry. For moms out there who like have the time and the energy, that's not me.
I'm not going to make up something else. What we're having is what we're having. But I've become okay if they don't like it. And I used to take it really personally. But now it's kind of like a game of like, do we like, do we not like? Do I put this in the, do I bookmark this one or do I, you know, delete it?
You know, and I think it's really funny. It's really interesting because my husband works at home. And so he'll go into his office and close the door. And that was, to me, I took that as a personal, like, I'm shutting you out.
Right, he doesn't want to talk to you.
Right, and then logically, I go, well, he's going to work. So I had to really work on that issue for myself. It's not taking it personal. So interesting.
It's so funny. So I didn't expect us to go down this path, but I love it. This whole idea of, hey, first of all, wherever you are in the change equation, it's happening no matter what. But more importantly, it doesn't have to be personal. We really do have to recognize that what we're debating is work and ideas, not each other. And I do think that's a whole skill in itself. We have a whole micro learning video on that in our on-demand program that companies have access to for that reason, because conflict is good for innovation, but we got to do it without it feeling like you're attacking me or I'm attacking you. And there are ways to do that. So I won't dig into that now because that's for a different podcast, but I love that you brought up that. So I want to take it to another place too, because when this woman that I met in Seattle was talking about how the challenge she really has is she can see it on their faces if the leadership takes it so personally. And so we got into this whole discussion about how do you position change and new ideas, because to your point, they have to happen. Because the reality is, if you're standing still, the world is still moving far past you, right? So it's almost like a motion picture where you're sitting there and the world is moving and you're sitting still. Like that's still moving backwards.
Yeah.
So how do you position ideas in a way? And I'm not going to go into the whole language of innovation and the whole method there. That's a whole other on-demand micro-learning. Kelly's heard it because she's seen me keynote twice. So I know that she knows that and she uses it. I think her question is a little different, so I want to take a little bit of a different angle.
Okay.
And I want to talk to you, and here, you've seen it. I know you've worked for some big companies in the past, too, how it's worked there. But here's my take on it. I think this woman who brought that up, first of all, I give her so much credit for recognizing that, wow, I'm telling someone they're wrong, and that's no fun to hear. That's not how she means it, and they need to get on board with change, right? It's not to minimize the importance of that. But how do I get them to not feel that way? And one of the things that I learned early on in my career, because, you know, this is not going to surprise anyone when I say this out loud, but when I was in my 20s, I knew everything.
What? You don't know? That's just stuff.
So here's what happened when I got to my 40s. I was like, I don't know everything. And that's actually a really relieving place to be.
It is a very relaxing. I don't know. It allows for openness.
I just submitted an article to Innovation Excellence, which is an innovation blog. It's a hub. It's a great place. Hopefully they release it. This is my hint to them to hurry up and do it. About how great leaders say, I'm wrong and I don't know. Like, they're comfortable saying that. So, but in my 20s, I didn't know that. And what would happen is, and also actually, let me say something else on it. I thought I knew everything, and I had all these new ideas I wanted to implement. I had all this enthusiasm and drive. And I think that some of those ideas were actually, looking back, they were right. They were the right thing to do. They were the change that needed to happen. But what I didn't recognize and what I didn't have respect for at that time was the people who I needed buy-in from, what they did got us to where we are today. Now, I'm all for what made you successful yesterday will make you obsolete tomorrow. But I didn't connect the dots for them to say, hey, what you did was awesome, and let me build on that and take it in a new direction. So
exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I love what you said, because basically it didn't say what you've done is obsolete and
crap, and you should have never done it, because it got us to where we are today.
Yeah.
We just can't do it moving forward.
Right, because we're evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
I have this whole like image of Plato now in my head, evolving and moving. I get the funniest images when other people talk sometimes. That's why I love talking to you, because I get all these like visuals in my head. So what I was telling her and the group, we were doing a VIP Q&A session after the keynote, was instead of going to them with just the new idea, and you got to be authentic about this, actively listen to what they're saying and find a way to connect the dots. Hey, Connie, what you did 5 years ago to bring in new members, to bring in new customers, got me thinking about where we are today and how we might try to do that, achieve that again in this new way. Or, hey, you tried this 7 years ago, because we are dealing with people who typically in those leadership positions, they've got 50 years of experience on us, right? Hey, when you came into this business and things were changing, here's how you handled it, which got me thinking about how we could change it today. And what you did is an inspiration for what we're going to do today. So I guess, first of all, my question to you, Connie, is when you hear me say that to you, if that was you, how does that help you take in the change versus here's my idea, we have to change or evolve, we can't do what we've always done?
First of all, I hear you see me. Okay, so you see I've done. And I think if there's nothing more we can do in our world to see people more, we would be so much more gentle with each other. Yeah, so the first thing you did was see me, and we want to move forward, and you're gonna bring my buy-in in.
Oh, well, tell me what you mean by that.
So you are almost asking me, you did a great job, I loved it, we're going to need to move forward a little bit different, what do you think? So that's how I felt when you said that.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, this is exciting. I did a great
not
job.
Not you're a legacy thinker, so I'm not saying that, but that's interesting, like that's how it would be perceived.
Yeah. I think we have to really look at our audience. It's kind of like, you know, if my five-year-old asks a question about sex, I'm going to respond in a certain way that would be different if my 12-year-old did, right? Because
I'm dealing with that right now. I'm a 13 and 9-year-old, so I totally know what you're talking about.
Right, and so if you're talking to someone who's been in their job for 50 years, you know that the neural pathways are pretty strong.
That's so interesting. Let me just stop for a second, because I think for launch treaters, what you're saying is so important. We have to recognize it in ourselves, and in especially those people who are the legacy people in our organization. They built super strong links in their brain of how things should work. And I'm going to take it a step further and tell me if I'm wrong. Our brains are built to be efficient. So we want to keep going back to those pathways that are super strong highways for us. Okay.
Right.
Huh. Just blew my mind.
Yeah. No. And so I think when we're talking to people like that, it's really important to word it like you did. You know, millennials, they're going to be fine. You know, I mean, when my phone updates and I've got new icons, that kind of makes me mad. Because now I have to learn
something.
Are you saying
that we're not millennials, Connie?
But they're so used to it.
Yeah.
You can say, hey, we're going to change things all up. And they're like, okay, that's cool.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, because they expect it.
I know. I will say this, we're a team of about six and a couple are millennials, and I love their embrace of change.
Yeah.
And I think that this is my little soapbox, by the way. I think the millennials get a bad rap for not being loyal, right? Being selfish, not having attention spans, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, I think every generation thinks the next generation is lazier than them.
Absolutely.
I'm a Gen Xer, right? I mean,
yeah.
Boomers thought we were horrible. So,
yeah.
I mean, we have a whole movie called Reality Bites based on our laziness. So it just is what it is. I also think that the enthusiasm and the acceptance of change that they bring is something that we can all learn from. So they are the ones, generally speaking, who see change as just constant. And it's just something to leverage and embrace. Where I think for those of us who are a little bit older, we see change as something that we really have to fight through. And I think that's the fundamental difference in the generations. I am not experiencing the lack of loyalty or the laziness. So I hear it, but I just see a different approach. And frankly, why shouldn't they lack loyalty? They saw all their parents get laid off in 2008 for companies they'd worked for 30 years with no loyalty whatsoever. So I wouldn't be loyal either.
Yeah.
That was my soapbox about millennials. So, okay. So if you're a millennial out there, I love you and I think you're awesome at change. So going back to neural pathways, this is why I wanted to talk to you and why I wanted to have you as my co-pilot. I love it. Will you, by the way, this is a side shoot, but will you talk a little bit about your time in airlines? Because that's an industry that's seen massive change. And you shared a story with me that just about had me peeing my pants.
Yes.
And thinking, thank God I wasn't on your flight. And then tell that and then talk a little bit about, I want to go back like to that, how you, in a world that's really regulated in industry and structure, like how did you guys embrace the people that didn't want to change?
Well, I was a flight attendant. I started with Continental Airlines in 1981. And it was so different. You know, I mean, it has changed so much. So the story that I was telling. So, you know, they don't do this now. But, you know, we used to hang out in the cockpit.
Look at, they still have the door wide open.
Yeah. We used to hang out in
the
cockpit.
Whole flight. I love it changed all that.
Yeah. So I was in the cockpit. Oh, boy, I think it was an Airbus. So it was a very large airplane. And I'm sitting in the co-pilot seat, and the captain says, hey, Connie, you want to bank this plane?
And banking is like going sideways,
just,
right?
Yes, just kind of turning just ever so slightly. So, yeah, I did. I banked this airliner. And I'm just thinking, wow, this is really cool. And I know what you said. You're going...
I'm just glad I didn't know. Like, had I been a passenger, and I know some, no offense to, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I think that the air flight attendants keep the airplane moving, right? They're the ones that make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and they are the connection to the pilot. So I have all the respect for that. And you're not a pilot.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh,
I
my
know.
God.
Oh my
I'm
gosh.
So glad I didn't know.
I am actually coming up with some blog stories about self-care, using my illustrating some of the stories from when I was a flight attendant. And so that'll be coming out.
Oh, my gosh.
I
can't. I
have so many stories.
You have other stories that hopefully at some point we'll get to. It may not be in this one. Maybe in the next Q&A we do about being a ninja, too, which is just – so I don't know if you know this, but not only has Connie worked in airlines, but she's also actually a ninja. And I don't mean, like, on Halloween. I mean, Connie is a ninja.
Yeah, did practice ninjutsu. Actually, 12 years of different martial arts.
Oh, my God, I love it so
yeah.
much. I love
yeah.
it so much.
Well, here's something that I think is very exciting in relationship
yeah.
to this. So one of the first things that I learned as a flight attendant, and I'm from the Midwest, so I was pretty, what's the word? Naive. One of the first things I learned was that people were very, very predictable by the city we were going to or leaving from.
Wait, what?
Absolutely predictable. I could tell how people were going to ask for their coffee. It was like, really? Is that who we are? Just our culture?
So will you give me an example?
Okay, well, I'll give you an example. When so I also worked on the in the concourse as a ticket agent. And if this was a New Jersey flight, and it was delayed, we actually got somebody who could speak New Jersey style
right.
to tell the people why we were delayed. Otherwise, all chaos would, because they were demanding.
Yeah.
And so we learned. And so I thought, man, is that who we are? And this is, again, where habits come in. And that's why I am so into bringing awareness to the mind
yeah.
and our thoughts and our patterns. Because I don't want to be like everybody else. Rebel's my middle name.
You are Rebel. But what I really appreciate about what you're saying isn't just the ridiculous and funniness of, like, they have to talk to a New York. Right?
Yeah.
I've been in New York City for many years. So I totally, like, it's a different culture. Than,
yeah.
And I grew up in California, so very different. And I was born in Israel. So I say Israel is probably closer to New York. But like, those are two different. You wouldn't go all aggressive to Californians,
yeah.
right? You would smile and take it easy. But to New Yorkers, you better hurry up and get to the damn point because I don't have time for you, which actually more fits me. But what I hear you saying in relation to Kelly's question about how do you get the blind people to see the light is you speak to people in a way that speaks, it connects to them. It's speaking their language. And I think that also goes back to what you were saying about being seen and heard is we spend so much time thinking about ourselves
mm-hmm.
that we don't stop and go, how does this person need to receive this information
right.
in a way that's going to match them? And I don't personally see that as manipulative. I see that as being really open-minded and aware of the people that we're dealing with. And I think that's why things like, you know, our whole language of innovation method works, but also what we're talking about today, which is how do you validate them in what they've done in the past while bringing them forward. And I know that there's some change makers out there going, well, why the fuck do I have to, like, come on, we need change. But the truth is, the reality that most of us live in is we still need those people to approve our budgets, to give us the resources and the people and the go-ahead. So we can complain or we can get it done.
Yeah. One of my favorite authors, Jon Kabat-Zinn, on mindfulness.
What is the name? Jon Kabat-Zinn.
Yes. He does a lot with mindfulness.
Is there a favorite book? Because I'd love to put that in the show notes.
Boy, I'm going to have to think about
okay.
that. I can't think of it right now.
We'll put the name in the
yes.
show notes. Maybe there's a website
okay.
they can link to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he tells a story about how he's remodeling his kitchen. And you know how they always take forever? They say, oh, it'll take
yeah.
6 weeks, and it's like 6 months. So he's about to go on vacation, and he needs this completed. So he keeps asking him, you know, I just so you know that I'm going to go on vacation. We need it done. No, yeah, 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 yeah. Well, it's clearly not going to be done. So finally he says, I think he even swears. He says, damn it, I need to get this done right now. We've got to go on vacation. It's got to get done right away. And the guy goes, oh, okay. All right, we'll get done. And what he was doing was he was doing construction speak.
Instead, in his language.
In the person could hear it then.
Isn't that
interesting?
So here's my challenge to all the launch readers out there listening is to, you know, kind of, your examples are so great. The airline, the construction, like such basic everyday things is practicing. My challenge to all of us is let's practice in our daily lives two things. One is speaking the language of the other person. So when you go to order a cup of coffee, speak the language of the culture of the coffee shop you're in, right? Or whatever it is. And the second thing is practice getting comfortable with people not liking stuff. So like dinners that people don't like and actually asking for that feedback, because it does get easier over time. But I think if we all did those two things a little bit more, we'd get more of those people that we see as blind or not, you know, status quo. I think we'd actually push them forward too if we took it on. And, you know, one of the things I firmly believe, you know, I think you're this way too, I'm all about personal accountability. And in innovation in particular, because I think oftentimes we get into this battle of, well, they don't understand. They don't get it. They're the ones keeping me from doing the change. And I like to flip it and say, no, you're actually the problem. It's not the they that we keep talking about. It's you, because if you want to make that change happen and you really want to own it, then you've got to make the effort to get them on board for the journey. And that's your responsibility. And that sucks because it means you have to do triple time work.
Yeah.
But that's the truth. If you want it to change and you're dealing with people who love status quo. And, you know, I might say too that I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I don't know that they love status quo, or if that, to your point, like you've kind of blown my mind on this. If it's just that their neural pathways are so strong, it's going to take extra work to break those habits that they've gotten into.
You know, it reminds me of my mom when she was trying to learn her iPad. And, you know, she learned typing on a manual typewriter.
So did I, by the way.
And
I loved typing class.
And so she would come in and just peck on this thing. And it wouldn't work because she needed a softer touch. But her neural pathways would find
that. Because that's how she was taught to type.
Yeah. And it's just
a great analogy.
I couldn't understand. I was like, Mom, softer. What are you doing? You know, I feel like she's like chicken, you know. But then when I realized that that was her neural pathways, and I just had to bring awareness to it. So
yeah.
She got better, you know.
Yeah. But she didn't even see how she was doing what she'd always done and how that wasn't working.
Right.
Because for her, it had worked for 50, 60 years. That's such a great analogy. I love the simplicity of that, of, hey, they're just, like, let's not get mad at them for being status quo. I think that's an innovation, the myth that we kind of perpetuated. It's a very us versus them, like, get on the bus or don't. But we still need these people. And over time, they'll phase out and the change will become greater. And that's all wonderful. But in the meantime, like, let's show them that they are pecking on that keyboard with way too much power because that's their habit.
Back off.
That's totally my dad typing, by the way. It's like, I'm like, what are you doing up there? And I say, like, when I go visit him, and I'm like, what is he doing up in his office? It's so
weird. I know. And then when you realize, oh, okay, that's what he grew up with. No, that's what he needed to do.
This has been so great. Okay, I'm going to, in the essence of time, although I feel like we could keep going on the subject, just to bring us kind of full circle, for Kelly, thank you so much for asking the question. Hopefully that helps about the blind seeing the light. Let's figure out a way to validate them and move them forward at the same time. And to what Connie said, start to kind of, I don't know if break is the right word, you probably have a better way to say it, break their neural pathways or create new ones because the ones that we're dealing with are so strong. And think of it that way.
And
I think that'll help.
And relaxing the tension that it's going to cause. Because it's going to cause tension. When we can make change, it's going to cause tension. So how do we relax that? And you did an excellent example. Because I see what you've done up until now. It's awesome. That's going to relax me.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Right. Giving them the, I think that's what I'm saying with validation. I like the way you said it, of releasing the tension. Validate and then connect.
Yes.
Validate and connect. If we can do more of that, I think more of those people that we see as in the dark and not dealing with change can actually come, you know, step into the light with us for those of us who see it a little more clearly.
I love it. Ah! Step into the light.
Step into the light. I feel like that's a new keynote for you.
Wasn't that interesting? I thought the conversation was riveting. I learned something. I thought Connie had some great points about that tension between what you know and new and what's uncomfortable. So here's what I want you to do, because I know you all have those people inside your organization that need to see the light, as Kelly put it. I want you to go onto our website and go to our blog page, and I want you to check out all the different videos that we have that will help you get those people to see the light. They'll help you think differently. They'll help them think differently. They're just some quick and easy resources and tools for you, and I don't want you to miss out on them. So just go to gotolaunchstreet.com, G-O-T-O Launchstreet, L-A-U-N-C-H-S-T-R-E-E-T.com, and just watch some of those videos. I think, you know, whatever you're dealing with, we probably have something on the site that'll help you out. All right. Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on gotolaunchstreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. Gotolaunchstreet.com.